Well, good morning and welcome. It's good to see everybody here. I know that for some the roads might not have been as good as it was for others. I appreciate everybody making it safely and making the effort to be here. It's a very good thing. Well, I would like it if you took out your Bibles and follow it along and tested once again what the scriptures say, and also testing ourselves. Every now and then, I believe, we have forgotten sins. You know, there are some things that we look at and we just know that's wrong, that's sinful. And we get accustomed to it to where we understand this will cost you your soul. And then there are some sins that I think we minimize, thinking, well, those aren't quite as bad. And sometimes I think we even just don't even think of them really as sinful. This is one of those that I believe falls into that category, where we know people that are this way, perhaps we are this way, but we don't think of it as being really wrong, as really something that displeases God. And the subject then is that of arrogance. And in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to look at arrogance this Sunday morning. And then, Lord willing, next Sunday, we're going to look at it again, and we're going to look at it from a different perspective. This morning, we look at an arrogant life. And next Sunday morning, we're going to look at an arrogant religion, having arrogance in our beliefs and our practices with God. And there's definitely going to be some crossover there. But let's start off with just this concept. Arrogance, pride, being puffed up, conceited, boasting, however you want to describe it, is bad. Really, really bad. And it is bad whether you're talking about the people that were in the Old Testament or the people of the New Testament. Whatever time period you're looking at, this is something that God has never liked in men and has always demanded that we not have. So we go back to the Old Testament in Proverbs 16 and verse 5. Here's what it says. Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Assuredly, he will not be unpunished. That word, abomination, is a very strong word. It is a word to say that this is not some minor thing in God's eyes. This is something that has truly defiled them, has truly made them wicked. And it is not some of them, but everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. In the New Testament, in 2 Timothy chapter 3, when the Spirit has made it clear that in these last days, men are going to be really bad. And that's what he's trying to say. Men are going to be really bad in these last days. Three different terms in that list relate to this idea of being arrogant. But realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come, for men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And it goes on from there. But here in this list of in these last times, this is how bad men are going to get. And he describes then three times. They're going to be arrogant. They're going to be conceited. We, of course, can look at this list and we say, well, this sounds like people today, and we might get excited and think the end is coming. And notice I say excited, not worried. We should be excited when we think about the end coming. But I don't want you to get too excited. In Acts chapter 2, Peter refers to an Old Testament quotation that talks about the last days. And then he says, these are the last days. So the last days have been going on for a long time, for 2,000 years. And in that time, here's the description of what people are and what they continue to be: boastful, arrogant, conceited. Arrogance is a big issue. In Romans chapter 1, Paul describes the downfall of mankind and how we have gone towards this horrible wickedness because we did not acknowledge God. And as the end of that chapter comes, and it says, here's how far down mankind is getting, well, he again describes arrogance. In fact, it actually starts with arrogance, because in verse 28 says, and just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer. That's a description of arrogance. But he goes on and says, here's what God's going to let them become. God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And although they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. Would you have thought of arrogance as one of the ultimate statements of the fall of man? This is really when man is getting really, really bad and really, really wicked. The evidence, one of them will be, they're going to boast a lot and they're going to be really arrogant. Would you have thought of it as something that is worthy of death? This is what we learn within scriptures. Arrogance is no laughing matter. It is no small thing. It is, in fact, a very significant thing. It is something that makes us an abomination to God, that God despises. We'll look a little bit more at some of this general subject later on, but let's turn to this idea of, how do I know if I'm arrogant? What are the symptoms? I have, on multiple occasions, been accused of being arrogant, and I have always very proudly told them, no, I'm not. And I joke about that, but the truth is, that's exactly how it was. I was not arrogant. Until later on, when I stopped and really examined myself and realized that many times when I've been accused of it, it has been accurate. I have been arrogant. And as I went through this list, and here's the irony of this, a sad irony, as I'm working on this sermon, getting it compiled, I come to realize that in the process of doing it, I was arrogant. I made a mistake of the heart. So what are these symptoms? How can we examine ourselves and see, are we arrogant? Because I think we can see it in others really easily. We get annoyed about being around people that are always boasting about how great they are, think so great about themselves, but how can we recognize it in ourselves? And that's what I want to start off with. So we're going to look at this idea of, well, do I have an arrogant life? Is there arrogance in the way I think and feel and act? And we're going to start off with this, the way we most frequently think of, and that is attitude towards one another, is the way that we can reveal and see if we are being arrogant. And in Romans chapter 12 and verse 16, says, be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind. This is that arrogant word. But associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. You know, there are in the context of Romans, we have to think about the idea of racism, of people looking down on somebody else because of their family. So the Jews might look down on the Gentiles because, oh, they're the Gentiles. And Romans 11 tells the Gentiles, don't you be looking down on the Jews because, oh, they're the Jews. And we could look at it and we could consider it from an economic point of view, whether we're talking about the rich looking down on the poor because they're poor, or the poor looking down on the rich because they're rich, or the men looking down on the women because they're women, or the women looking down on the men because they're men. It goes on and on and on. But if you are looking down on people, if you think of yourself as better than others, don't stop and say, well, here's why I'm better than others. Consider that just the very fact that you've done it, don't justify yourself, but the fact that you've looked down on others saying I'm better than them is a clear indication you may have a heart issue. And so the passage that was read for this morning, Luke chapter 18, I think is familiar for most people. As Jesus describes these two men that go to pray, he's in the context of people that are trusting in themselves that they're righteous. And it says in verse 9, they viewed others with contempt. Well, this is an issue of pride. This is an issue of arrogance. Because Jesus, when he finishes this little discussion in verse 14, says, I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone who exalts himself, arrogantifies himself, would be a word if it wasn't. Wait, that didn't make any sense. But that could have been what he could have said, this idea of exalting, puffing up, making oneself haughty. They're making themselves arrogant. He says, if you do that, God tears you down. And so I think about this man, this Pharisee. In verse 10, two men went up into the temple to pray. One a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself: God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all that I get. And in there we see this horrible attitude, but look at the man's life for a second. He's praying to God in the temple. And let us assume for a moment that he is not lying to God, but is speaking the truth, and he's not like other people. He's not unjust. He's not an adulterer. He's not a thief. He's religious. He pays his taxes. That's not really what he's focusing on, but he pays his tithes. He gives to God. He fasts. He's religious in all these various ways. And it's all wasted. It is all for nothing. Because what he has mixed in with it is arrogance, pride. I wonder how many people within the churches would be able to say something so similar. Would be able to say that, you know, I'm better than the people of the world because I don't commit this sin and this sin and this sin and this sin. I assemble three times in the week. I give. I partake of the Lord's Supper. I do all these things. I'm better than the rest of the world. And all those things that you said were good. All those things that you're not sinning, that's good. All those practices of religion, that was good. But then that attitude of that makes me somehow better than the rest of the world nullifies it all. We have to look at our attitude towards others. What else must we look at? Well, we need to look at whether we're taking the future for granted. In James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. It really just seems like this is such a minor thing, not a big deal, but we're talking about sin, and we're talking about the lowest of mankind. So he starts in verse 13, says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit." Who would have listened to that and said, "Oh, now that's really bad. How dare you say something like that?" But he goes on, he says, "Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is a sin." And so here, when we have this great confidence that this is what we're going to do in the future and this is how we're going to accomplish it, that is an indication of arrogance. An assumption that you control the future and that you know the future. And that God has no part in it. And so it is not meant to be some formula in which every word and every phrase we say we include if the Lord wills. But it is supposed to be an attitude that says, I recognize I'm not in control. And that last part, verse 17, therefore the one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is a sin. In this context, is saying this: if you know something is right to do and you put it off because you'll do it later, that is a sin because you're assuming later. You're assuming that later is going to be there. What's the great sin? It's arrogance. It is boasting and pride. An arrogant life is one that... Well, I want you to consider this point. Every now and then, when I listen to other preachers, I usually get really frustrated. And I'm going to do what I get really frustrated about, because I see them make a point, and I'm like, you know what? That scripture doesn't say that. I almost wiped this out this morning. I almost took it out. It was still going to be in your bulletin. So here's an opportunity for you to understand, sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we use a scripture and we try to say it means something when it doesn't. But I want you to consider this one. Psalm 131. And you can tell me afterwards if you agree or if you think that maybe I've overstated it, because I'm at this point not convinced myself. But Psalm 131 most definitely fits into our subject, but maybe not necessarily into my application. Starting in verse 1, he says, "O Lord, my heart is not proud, nor my eyes haughty. nor do I involve myself in great matters or in such in things too difficult for me. Surely I have composed and quieted my soul, like a weaned child rests against his mother. My soul is like a weaned child within me. And so what we have is this contrast. He says, here's what I'm not and here's what I've become. I am not proud and I am not arrogant. I'm not haughty. And instead, I have quieted my soul. And it's a description of a contentment, of being satisfied and not pushing things too hard to understand what he cannot understand. And when I read that the first time, when I looked at that, I said, oh, here's a description of those who are arrogant are going to be not quiet. They're going to be the complainers and the grumblers and the people who are upset with their circumstances. And I believe that that is going to be a truth anyway. But I'm not convinced that this passage necessarily applies in that regard. But really, when we complain, is that not an indication that we believe we know better as to what should be happening to us? Is it not an indication that we believe we deserve better than what is happening to us? Well, there is no question that complaining has no place amongst Christians. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 14, it says, do all things without grumbling or dispute. And in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 12, there's no question that we should be content, because Paul has set the example, says, I can be content in under all circumstances. So that is true. But I give it for your consideration that complaining in our lives may be an indication of arrogance. Additional, another indication is when we just have to have our way. When it always has to be our way, is that not an indication of arrogance? Whenever we're in an argument or a discussion with family or with anybody at work, it's got to be our way because I know what's right and I know what's best. And clearly there's an indication thereof, and you don't. Jesus said, that's not the way the leaders of Christianity will be, and that's not the way the best ones will be. In Matthew chapter 20, verse 25, two of the disciples have just tried to elevate themselves. The rest of the disciples are really upset at them for their attempt, and Jesus now is going to explain. He says, hearing this, the ten became indignant with the two brothers, but Jesus called them to himself and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the great men exercise authority over them. It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to be great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. And so the Gentiles in their leadership force their will upon others. And Jesus says, that's not the way we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be humble, not arrogant. Serving, not being served. And so then in 3 John verse 9, we have Diotrephes, the man who loves to be first. And that is the type of arrogance we're not supposed to have. And then 1 Peter 5 and verse 3, he instructs the elders, this is not the way you're supposed to be either. You're not supposed to lord it over the flock. But when we have to have our way, whether we're talking about leadership within the church, leadership at home, or any other position, is that not an indication that we have arrogance in our life? And then Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 25. An arrogant man stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. Now, I'm not going to say that every time you have strife, you have arrogance. But there's a connection. Arrogant people stir up strife. They cause trouble. They cause a bunch of fights. And I have known people who always seem to be arguing. They always seem to disagree. They always seem to be upset at how wrong everybody else is. They don't think straight. They can't understand. They can't comprehend. All of you other sheeple, you might hear. Things like that. Has it ever occurred to them that if everybody else is wrong, it may be them that's the problem? I mean, if you always have a problem with somebody else, maybe they're not the problem. Maybe the problem is you. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm not saying that we can know this. I'm just saying it's one of those things that should catch our attention and make us stop and say, perhaps I have this serious heart disease that is pride. That is arrogance. That is boasting. Well, next week, what we want to look at is arrogance in religion. What I want to finish off this week is arrogance without religion. Because when we don't have a proper religious life, that is an act of arrogance as well. Consider Psalm 10, verses 3 through 4. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire, and the greedy man curses and spurns the Lord. The wicked, in the haughtiness of his countenance, does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. No religion is arrogance. When we have a life that has no religion, that is a statement of arrogance. Perhaps you've heard every now and then somebody say, the weak-minded have religion because they need it to comfort them. They need it for these other things. Have you heard something quite that arrogant? Did you hear what they said? The rest of the world needs to create a God because they need something to help them. But I'm so strong, I do not need such weak things. What arrogance to say we don't need God. There is no God. Of course, on the same side, he's talking about this wickedness, and that is, we'll just live our own life because I don't need to seek God. I don't need to please God. I don't need God's help. That comes from arrogance. Some people who are religious become irreligious during their week. Some people who are religious and have faith forget it. They forget God. How many times have we heard on the first day of the week when somebody gets up to partake of the Lord's Supper and they lead us in the thoughts and they remind us, let us not be remembering this just right now, right here. This should be something we remember and act upon throughout the whole week. Why do we have to keep saying that? Well, one, because it's true, we ought to be thinking about this all week long. But the other is because I think frequently we forget. Frequently, we get in on our lives and we're busy with other things, and instead of being a Christian, we are whatever our job is, we are whatever our role in family is, we are something else, and we forget about our role as a Christian and our relationship with God. Well, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 14. This forgetfulness could be an indication of something bad. Then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. What made them forget? They didn't need to remember. They became arrogant, forgetting what God had accomplished, how much they needed him, and so they just kind of forget God. Hosea 13 and verse 6, same principle. As they had their pasture, they became satisfied. And being satisfied, their heart became proud. Therefore, they forgot me. It's this process. When we have the things we want, the things we need, we let it get to our heart and to our mind, and we become arrogant, which leads us to forget God. So do you remember God all week long? Do you have trouble keeping track of your religion, keeping track of your focus on God? That may very well be an indication that what you have is a heart problem. What you have is pride and arrogance because we forget we need him always. How's that song go? I need thee every hour. That's the way we should be. Well, Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 12 is a contrast to that. It's the other side of it. What if we're not arrogant? What if instead we're humble? And so there he says, but I will leave among you a humble and lowly people, and they will take refuge in the name of the Lord. When we are humbled, when we are low, when we recognize our weaknesses and our need for God, we will turn to God and we will always be with God because we will always know we need God. And so if we forget those things, it's an indication of arrogance. And the last thing that we will consider this morning is that we don't give back. So 2 Chronicles chapter 32. I actually talked about this a little bit in this morning's class. Talked about Hezekiah and the challenge that he faced with the northern, with Assyria. Assyria had come down and had actually conquered the northern kingdom. Assyria was the great power of its day. And it attacked Judah, where Hezekiah is king. And they do so very arrogantly. The Assyrians come in and they say to the people, do not let the king deceive you. Do not turn to your God and think he somehow will save you. What about these other gods? They couldn't save them. We conquered them. We are the Assyrians. We conquer gods. And God, of course, looked at that and he saw that as arrogance. And he thoroughly destroyed the Assyrians for doing it. And so Hezekiah is victorious. And in verses 20 through 23, it talks about this great victory and the great response. The people turn to God and they're giving God all these things. And they turn to Hezekiah and say, you did a great job. And they start giving Hezekiah all these things. And so he's given all these things. But then verse 25, but Hezekiah gave no return for the benefit he received because his heart was proud. Therefore, wrath came on him and on Judah and Jerusalem. So here in this moment, Hezekiah forgets, God gave me the victory. And instead thinks, I am victorious. And in that moment, he forgets to give God the glory. And perhaps it's talking about tithing. All these things are being given to him, and he forgot to take a tenth of it as they were to do under the Old Testament and to give it back to God. Perhaps that's what he forgot. Perhaps it's just that he forgot to give God the glory and the praise. Whatever it is, when we forget to give God what he deserves for what he has given us, that is an indication that we have pride because we think, God didn't give it. I earned it. It's mine. And so 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 7. For who regards you as superior? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? And so here are these people that are boasting about what they have as if they had earned it, as if it was always theirs. I think it's talking primarily about spiritual gifts. They had received these gifts from God. And listen, it's a gift from God. And they start thinking that they're better than other people because they got this gift and that other person has this gift. My gift is better than your gift, therefore I'm greater than you. And they're forgetting the fact that they've received gifts from God. Who's better? Who's greater? God. Not me. God. He's the one who should receive the praise, the glory, the honor. So here it is. We've come to Thanksgiving week. And this is a good time. It's a good time for us to be remembering to thank God. But if that's unusual for us, that's an issue of arrogance that we forget. So I'm working on this sermon, right? And as is frequently the case, I get distracted. I start working on other things. I start looking at other things on the internet. And I don't know exactly how I came upon it, but there was this article. And it was through several links, so I could never find it again, I don't think, in my life. But the article was from somebody who was poor, and they were trying to explain the decisions of the poor and saying, these decisions make sense if you're poor. And so I read the article. And at the end of the article, so many people were praising this person for explaining what they had felt and what they understood. And she's getting all sorts of requests to speak in places and to write other things. And people are sending her all sorts of money. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, see, that's why you're poor. It's like you're making these decisions, and isn't it obvious? You're deciding to smoke. You're spending your money on smoking because you feel bad, and so you want to feel good. Well, why do you think you're poor? And so just decision after decision after decision like that, where they're justifying their decisions and saying, this is why I'm poor. And I was looking at it saying, no, you see, the rich people, they're making better decisions, and that's why they're rich. And then I remembered the lesson that I happened to be working on. You're not rich because of the decisions you make. Oh, there's wisdom, and there is effort, and those things are important and increase your opportunities. They are useful, they're good, but you want to know something? Without God, you simply are not rich. Without God, you simply cannot be rich. And I mean that spiritually, and I mean that physically. Anybody who has the physical blessings on this earth, God has allowed them to have it. And He can take it away in an instant. And so here I got caught up in, are we poor or are we rich based on the decisions we make? And the truth of the matter is, wherever we are at, we should give God the praise and the glory. For He's the one who's in control. So sometimes I get accused of being arrogant, and you know what? They're right. Because little things like that I find, and I realize I'm wrong. And it's not some little minor thing. Arrogance is an abomination to the Lord. So, let's go back to that 2 Chronicles passage for a second. Hezekiah has been given this great victory. He's been given so many things. He forgets to thank God and to give back. And so God brings upon him grief and difficulties. And that's what verse 25 said. But then there's verse 26. However, Hezekiah humbled the pride of his heart, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord did not come on them in the days of Hezekiah. Perhaps when you examine yourself, you realize you are arrogant. That is who you have been, and that may be what's in your heart, but that's not what has to stay. We can change. We can humble ourselves before God and realize our errors and improve. Are there any here who are not Christians? Now is the time to give up the arrogance of resisting God's way. The arrogance of living a life without Him. And to humbly come to Him and say, I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. I repent of my sins. And to be baptized into Him for the forgiveness of your sins. And if you're a Christian and you have fallen away, do not say in your heart, God's not coming back. Do not say in your heart, God does not see. Do not continue in the way of arrogance, but come back. Our lesson for us as well is if you come back, we have to be humble about it. Not look down upon you for you're making a mistake, for you sinning, but for us to rejoice with the angels in heaven that you've returned. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
There's a message true and glad.